everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the FinEDU podcast. I am your host, Rochelle Denepoth, and I'm very excited today because I have a guest on today's episode. So I actually get to talk to somebody about something that I'm super excited about and passionate about and cannot wait to dive into the conversation. So for those of you that have not listened yet, you've picked a great time to start listening, and I hope you will continue and subscribe and enjoy this episode today that I'm going to have a chat with somebody who's going to shed a lot of light on a big topic of conversation for years, but more so over the past year right now. So before we dive into the conversation, I should probably introduce you to my guest today, Annie Cecatelli, who is, well, there's a lot of things, and I'm going to have Annie do a broader introduction of the work that she does. But if you are familiar with Turnitin, Annie does work as the Chief Product Officer at Turnitin. So Annie, first of all, welcome and thank you for being a guest on my podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I can't wait to learn more about you and Turnitin and all of the things that are going on over there, especially, you know, with education. And I know your background is full of a lot of ed tech experience. So I guess before we dive in, I'd love to know, and everybody always like, I love stories. I like to know how you got to where you are, because I find that everybody that you talk to, like where they ended up is not where they necessarily, you know, thought they would end up. Or there have been all these different kind of different transgressions along the way. And I know my story is, I'm not really sure. It's a long and winding tale. But could you share with us what got you to where you are today?
Sure. No, I love these stories too. I often like to tell them to kind of folks who are newer in their career to help them understand that, you know, you can say you have all these goals and you're going to ladder up to exactly where you want to be. But a lot of times you have to look around you and see the different options and take some chances and realize when you're a part of something special. That's always kind of the big thing. So I started in education technology by accident, as many of us start in our careers. I did consulting for a year after college. I was an engineer. So my background is engineering with economics. So I always knew it kind of like the business side of things. And I did consulting. I did not like it. It was like the standard out of college, go do this. And I felt that, you know, I didn't like giving advice and leaving. That just felt inauthentic to me. I'd like to stay and really grow and understand and dive deeper. And so I needed a job that would allow me to do that. So I was in New York City, and there was a startup that was working on virtual classrooms. And this is in 1999. And so I thought that was great, a way to have classes online. I mean, what could be more impactful on the future? It didn't matter where you were. You could always have access to the best teachers. You could always have access to content no matter where you were. So I joined that startup in 1999, and we sold it to Blackboard in 2010. It became the Blackboard Collaborate for those. And before that, it was called Wimba, if you know the industry. And then it was recently sold to class.com. So it was before there was COVID. I always say I built a product that it took 20 years for people to realize I needed. I built virtual classrooms for education. But in that, I really learned about educators and institutions and students and kind of how they all come together to create experiences that really allow for access and opportunity. But I also realized that teachers have it tough. Like I knew that my mom was an educator, but the amount of change that technology brings is super exciting, but it also can be really hard given the amount of time it takes to learn or to change curriculum or to really rethink things requires time and effort. And I think that's going to be relevant in our conversation today around kind of what does AI mean? And it's not just a technology, but how do we think about incorporating it? So I stayed at Blackboard for a few years. And then I had heard of this small company called Amazon. And I wanted to learn a little bit more about software development and scale and new technologies. So I moved out to Seattle to work on the Kindle team. So it was Kindle for schoolwork and government. And then I also wanted to learn about all the new things that AWS does. Around AI in particular. And so I went to work at AWS, and then I found my way to Turnitin. So long way of saying 24, 25 year career in ed tech. I realized, you know, back to the advice that I give, I realized early that I was lucky. I realized that this was going to be an important thing for all of us, and that we'd have to figure out how to adjust and how do we would have all these new technologies. And back then it was just the internet. I always tell people we didn't have, like right now I'm doing this and I have a video and I have great audio. I used to tell people how to install a sound card in their Dell tower. I don't know if you remember those days where you tell them to unscrew the back and you'd slide in a sound card and then they'd have to go to Radio Shack. Do you remember Radio Shack? And they'd have to go to Radio Shack and get a little microphone that they would plug into their computer. But those were the days, and that's how all of this started. And now we have all of this at our fingertips. And I think the next chapter is about how we use it to not just replicate, but really reinvent.
Yeah. And I love that. And I, you know, I knew a little bit about your background, and just, it's different when you read about somebody, but when you actually hear it coming from them and the voice, and just, you could tell your passion for it, first of all. And then the one thing I think about when anybody talks about tech and what we have available today, like, it is amazing that, especially, you know, if we didn't have the technology that we have whenever COVID hit, like, what would we have done? I mean, we would have probably figured out a way to keep learning and working. We would have had to, but we had all these technologies available. And thinking about, you know, I've been in tech for a long time. I'm not going to say how long, but I've always been a fan of technology. And in my classroom, I started to use it more probably around maybe 2010 as a language educator. I was teaching the way I've been taught. And a lot of it was like, here's your packet, here's your paper. Okay. Don't, you know, no conversations, no group work. And that's it. Didn't do anything online. Then I started to see the value in a lot of the tools that are out there. But it took it seemed like, and I don't know if you feel this way too, it seemed like it took a while for it to really catch on. Like, there were some tools that people started to cling to. They were easy to use. And then it was kind of like, all right, we're going at a good pace. And then COVID hits, you're like, I don't know what to use. And then you go back in the class and you're like, now I'm using everything. And it's just, it's been so interesting. And then now comes AI, which I know for, and I have another question to ask you before we get into the AI, but then it feels like for many people that it is something so new, but it's not. When I say we're talking like back, you know, the last century, but all of these new tools. So it's really an exciting time, I think, in the world in general, but definitely as an educator, especially when I think about how I learn as like an eighth, ninth or 10th grader, like I tell the students, like, here's a book. I show them, like, here's your Google Translate. You know, like, this is what we had to use. We needed to like have 15 different devices to do the things that you could do on your phone. So, but I am curious first though, because your role seems like it involves so much that you're responsible for. So I know as educators, you know, we talk, you were even saying too, like, there are so many things that we have to do and we have to learn new technologies and methods and keep up with all these changes. And I know how busy our days can be, but somebody who is in your position that is overseeing all of these different things, like, just out of curiosity, what is a typical day like for you in the work that you do?
Gosh. Okay. So I run product managers. So what product managers do, for those of you who don't weren't as clued into software development, product managers define kind of what's in the product, how do you think about selling the product? It's kind of the strategy behind the product. Like I always tell people, it's not so much the product, but what problem are you trying to solve? Especially in education, don't build technology and products for product's sake, but what are the problems you want to solve? And then you can think about, like, well, what do we need to do to solve that problem? And they have to be experts in the users as well. So I have product managers, I have UX researchers. So what researchers do is, just like in education, they go off and they do research, because we, especially now with all of this, have to learn, like, what are the ways an educator, what are the challenges they have in front of them every day that they're using our software? Because we have to think about not just our software, but kind of their whole day. Just like you're asking me about my day. If you're an educator and I want to make sure that my tool is useful to you, I have to understand everything you do and then understand how it fits in. So we have researchers, we have designers. I also have a team of product marketers. Product marketers translate kind of what those products are to, like, the go-to-market team, the market, the messaging, the website, so all of that. So kind of incorporate that whole space. So a day in my life. So I do, I personally, I'm a big reader, but I do like to start with like your general podcasts of the day, I think. So I do a general wake up tech podcast, tech business podcast. Mainly, I started doing that a lot with AI. I didn't need to keep up as much before, quite honestly. Things weren't changing as rapidly. But then when ChatGPT came out, and a little bit before that, you know, I really, it was moving so fast that it became something I had to learn better about. How do I keep up with my knowledge? And even now, it is impossible. It is too much information for you to understand all these different models, how they've changed, how they're different. Like, we're only human, right? And we all have lives. So I do start out that way. And I would say the rest of my day, I try to meet with as many of my team as possible across the board on the different projects that we're working on. And I also try to every week have enough meetings with sales and our customer managers to get the voice of the customer is really important. I think it's easy to lose sight of any company to be like really internally focused. But that makes you not good, actually. Like, if you become so internally focused, you're not really representing the customer well. So that's really important to me. We're also a normal organization. So I do, like, this time of the year, I'm doing performance reviews. I'm doing goals for next year. So it's also just the general care and feeding of an organization. And like, how do you, you know, we had a meeting today about high performers. How do you motivate high performers? So there's, you know, regardless of what industry you're in, I think a lot of good organizations have similar functions. They might build different products, whether the product is educating a student or that product is actually delivering a product. We all have to kind of manage people because they're our greatest assets.
Yeah, I love that last part that you said too. And that is true, the people part. But the other thing that stuck with me is I love that even with all of the different things that you're doing and all of those different tasks that take up your day, you still start with something. And people will push back with me. Sometimes they'll say, like, what are you doing for self-care? And I'm like, well, I'm getting up and I'm like reading a book. Well, what's it on? I'm like, it's on education, or mostly, you know, it's on AI, or it's podcasts and something like that. And for me, that is like taking care of myself, because, you know, I can do that while I'm walking, or I can do that while I'm sitting outside. Yep. And it's just, it's a break, but it's a good way to start the day and just to get some focus in your day. And the other thing I love about what you said too is, you know, I did, like you said, I did feel like for a while, because I think I first started to do research about AI in the fall of 2017 to write an article for Getting Smart, because I had been writing blogs about, you know, what I'm doing in my classroom, which that's easy to do. Like, I tried this method, this is how it went, here's some ideas, okay, done. But I wasn't pushing myself to learn. And then they had a theme for January of 2018 about AI. And of course, you know, there's all these things coming to my mind when I thought of AI. So I got really interested in it. And for a while I was like, okay, yeah, I can do this. I'm teaching about it, you know, sharing ideas at conferences. And all of a sudden, boom, 2022, December hits, you know, ChatGPT comes out. It's like all of the hype about AI and everything, like, it was something so new. But I did in 2020 do some research on GPT, and I could not believe what its capabilities were. And thinking back how many years from then till now, and just thinking ahead too, like, what's it going to look like? And so my question to you is, you know, talking about ChatGPT, how do you see that it has progressed, especially, you know, throughout 2023? Because I know at the beginning, and I'll just share this one statistic with you, which I still found to be surprising. When I've done sessions, I'll do surveys to find out where people's comfort level is. You know, have you used ChatGPT? And there's all these other questions. And even up through October, the people that were in my sessions, it was between 65 and 75% that had not tried ChatGPT yet. And I was surprised. Mm-hmm. So have you had any similar experiences, or what are your thoughts about how, you know, it has progressed with respect to like ChatGPT from the onset, like, oh, here it is, till like, you know, we know it's here. It's not going to just poof, disappear and go away. So what are your thoughts?
And I think I'm also trying to make sure I'm not, that I realize my thoughts are also in a biased environment, in the sense that I work in tech. I tend to be in a higher educated socioeconomic group of friends. And so I try to also apply, like, my experience is not the same as everyone's experience, because I think that's really important, especially the statistics we're seeing, especially in K-12, around kind of what could be a problem with a new type of digital divide. But I'm sure we can talk about that a little bit later. But for me, we did a survey first in higher ed, and that was as recent as September. I think it was 47% of faculty had not even tried it once, which, like, That's surprising to me. That's really super surprising. And when I talk to teachers, I tend to, once again, I talk to the ones who self-select that want to talk to me. So they're like the super early adopters. Like they're using it in curriculum and all this other new ways and thinking about it, but that's not everyone. And I get the answer around like, well, we're so busy, I don't know how to start. I think that's the hardest thing for people is, where do I start? And I always say to teachers, the first thing you can do is just put your assignments in. Type in the prompt, type in your assignment, and you'll start and go from there. Like, you'll know what the next question is. Whereas students, I think, you know, there's a dependency on where the student is, it seems, from a geographic and socioeconomic perspective. I have three teenagers. Well, one just turned 20, so I guess he's not a teenager. But I have two college students and a 15-year-old, and they are quite good at using it. And they use it for really interesting things. And I think that that's where I started. I had my youngest use it in front of me. I would kind of watch her. So it was more like supervised use. So I could see, like, understand, like, hey, this is probably not the best use of it, or this is a good use of it, and really try to learn together. And one of the best uses I see early of it with her was just summarizing. She had to summarize a chemistry lab. It wasn't even English. It wasn't even an essay. She was just like, I'm so confused by what this is even saying. I would love to, like, ask a teacher, what does this mean? Can you dumb this down for me? And so she quickly picked up that ChatGPT, one of the best uses of it is summarizing or restating or simplifying something that's complex. So, I mean, my kids picked up very quickly on where it's good and where it's not good. Now, it's interesting in terms of how it's evolved, because you hear different reports. Right? And I think it's hard to really know what is, because even OpenAI doesn't know exactly kind of how it evolves and changes, because it's kind of this living thing. People don't realize it's always growing and changing and evolving. And so it's really hard to say, like, today it's the same as it was 2 months ago, because that's not the case. It's not going to be the case. But I think what shocked everyone was how human-like it sounded very early on. It didn't sound robotic, and how in the pros it used. And I also, by the way, do like to use specifically talk about AI as something, like you said, it's been out here for a long time, and large language models. Large mm-hmm. language models as a type of AI, but not all AI is a large language model. And so this is just one type of AI, and that's an LLM, and how quickly, in a transformer model, right? Like how it works, and the stipulations it uses to kind of create its algorithm. And that's been evolving. One of the things that we've seen recently, like I said, it's like our beliefs is that the output is shorter than it was at first. At first it would just kind of go on and on, these long essays. It does seem now that the output of ChatGPT is a little bit shorter, a little bit more condensed. So it'll evolve, I think, it'll evolve monthly, if not more so, as we continue to use it. But it's been interesting to watch, you know, and then people early on, we all saw the hallucinations, and then some say, well, those hallucinations have decreased. And then we talked to OpenAI about that, and they're like, no, they really haven't. That's just people's perception. So it's actually kind of hard to pin down how it evolves. It's this living thing.
Yeah. And I think part of that too is it's going to be based on your own experience too and how you're using it. Because the example, like you said, like Kim, I had asked for some feedback, you know, reflecting on the year with, you know, ChatGPT and other forms of generative AI, which we didn't have nearly as many out there, you know, 6 months ago. But it was interesting to hear from the students. Like, I did have a student who said, I use it for chemistry. And that, I think, conversation happened back in April. And so I'm working on my doctorate. My focus is on AI and the need for professional development for educators, because I mean, it's such a new area, and PD has been, you know, an issue. Like, you want it to be relevant and meaningful for teachers across all levels and grade bands and everything, and content areas. But this summer I took a statistics course, and it was one of the most difficult courses that I have taken. I mean, even more difficult than law school, I said at one point. I don't know if that was an accurate statement, but it's just the thing with numbers. And it was asynchronous, fully online. I have no idea how many students the teacher had, nor how many classes, but I watched YouTube videos, you name it. I mean, you can find tons of great resources, but I just wanted somebody to summarize it for me. Like, can you explain this to me? I went, like, I'm a 10th grade student in statistics class. And I took it down a couple levels. And I got it. And I eventually got an answer from my teacher. But for students, you know, and for teachers, if you're a learner, I mean, we're always learning. Like if you need mm-hmm. something to be summarized or explained to you or just express it a different way, like there are so many ways to use it. And the surprising thing, like you said, you know, a lot of people haven't tried it yet. And I always encourage people, like, think of something that takes you a really long time or a prompt or an assignment that you would give your students in class. But what I have noticed, it's great at doing a lot of things. I mean, there is an endless list. I remember the first night I went on it, it was like a 3-hour adventure with ChatGPT in that December. But it's just interesting because I do notice that in my own experience that there are some key phrases that I've seen, like, let's delve into this. Like there's some certain wordings I pick up all the time.
It does.
Yeah. And so I do notice that, but I think with everything, with all technology that we've seen come into the classroom and into the world of work over the years, there's always been this kind of like hesitancy a little bit, like, well, what's it going to do? You know, like Google, mm-hmm. we've heard all the arguments and everything, but you try to see the good and like, what does it help for me? I think, mm-hmm. you know, if I can get time back to work with my students, that's great. If it can help me with some of those tasks, if a student is struggling in something, they need a summary, or we want to differentiate for students. Like there's all these possibilities, especially with the process of writing. Sometimes I'll say, could you just give me like a sentence starter, like just an idea, just a prompt to get me started. And the writing process is huge. And that's so much of what everybody does. And so I know that with Turnitin, you know, there's years and years of work and research that's gone into creating, you know, what you offer for schools. And so just, can you share a little bit about, you know, the kind of work that you do with school districts, how it supports educators and any of that kind of information, because there may be some people that really don't know, you know, how much is offered from Turnitin.
Yeah. So I'll start kind of give a little bit of a background of the company for those who don't know. Turnitin's been in academic integrity for over 25 years. We celebrated our 20th anniversary this year. It's funny, my husband used to teach high school English and he was one of the early users, which I think is really funny. It's, you know, mainly around originally very much trying to focus on helping teachers understand whether a student copied and pasted something or didn't cite right, or perhaps instances of plagiarism. That was where it got started. It was really the internet created new problems, right? The internet created problems that the information's at everyone's fingertips. Students can just copy and paste anything and they'll never have to write again, right? That was probably the worry, you know, in 2000, in 1999. And so Turnitin set out to solve that problem, to help give teachers insight of like, hey, this looks like it could be similar to this thing over here, this journal argument. And so we developed products really in that vein, and we created something called a similarity score that the teacher can use to see how much a percentage of the paper looks like it could be from other sources. It could also just be poor citation. It could also be restating the prompts, right? Which also can look like it's, obviously it's similar to the prompts, right? That's to be known. So we created that, you know, that core product that's been used and still in market, obviously today. Teachers depend on understanding when they look at something, does it exist other places? That's it, that's all it is. And the teacher makes a judgment call or has a conversation with a student to say, here, did you know that this was similar to what's over here? Did you use that as a source? If so, let's work on citing it. We've been, you know, very lucky to be in the classrooms and the lecture halls of many institutions over the years to kind of learn and evolve. We evolve this product all the time, even though it sounds like it's doing the same thing. How teachers use that information always changes, and we can always simplify that experience. So that's always changing. And then when ChatGPT came out, we had already been working. We knew that this was going to happen. We had been working with large language models since ChatGPT 3.0 was released. Yes, in June 2020. So we started the project in June 2020 so that we could understand the statistical markers. Like, were there? Let's start there. Were there statistical markers? How did it work? What are the ways that you would be able to detect? And so we started on that then. And then when we released in November 30th of 2022, we had a pretty good head start. The hardest part of the project and helping educators understand it is the user experience. I always go back to that. Like, this back-end technology is not trivial, but it's manageable. You're not dealing with humans, though. Once you start dealing with how a human is going to interpret and what their action is on something, that's where the real art comes in, and that's when we work with institutions. So we work with K-12 schools. We work with higher ed as well to understand how can we make this, what do they need? And the first thing we heard, as everyone did, December and January, was just a lot of fear of like, oh no, what are we going to do? Like, how are we going to know that somebody wrote something or not? Like, we all know that was the first reaction. Of course it is. And so they're like, we need you to put out some sort of tool to help us understand this. So you can show, give us transparency into how it's being used or where it's being used. So we worked really hard in December, January, February, March. We launched something in April. It was imperfect. And we told the market, listen, we're going to get better at this. Just like everything else in the market, this is new for us too. But we're going to be transparent as we try to work through and continue to develop the model. And so in the model, our own model evolves, right? So we just released in December an update based on the ways we see students trying to get around our systems. So they could have ChatGPT write something, and then they go and they tell a word spinner, perhaps something like QuillBot, to then rewrite what ChatGPT wrote. So by the way, students, if you're listening to this, we're on to you. Like, if you're going to post it on TikTok, like, we're going to have it in our product development backlog. So we update our model continuously as we learn. And then it's interesting that what's changed the past 6 months is it's not so much around detection as it is transparency. I think that's the difference. It started out as like, show it to me. And now it's like, make it transparent so that teachers can understand where it's being used and allow for it to be used and to just get a sense of how to construct and how to use it as a tool. But in order to do that responsibly, a teacher needs to know where it is. Like, it needs to know that it exists. And so like everyone else, as they're trying to, you know, grow and learn from it, and so are we as a company, right? And now it's really, how do we provide that transparency to teachers? We know not all students are great actors either. There are plenty of students who are using it to misrepresent their work, right? Not all students are trying to use it to be the best writer and thinker. Absolutely true. So we're trying to evolve and learn from that and work with our instructors. One of the specific examples was early on, we had this problem where, it wasn't a problem, but we were having the user experience and we're like, you know, if it's less than 20%, we're not always this confident about that number. Maybe we should just put a check mark and say, nothing to see here. Like, you know, unless it's over 20%, we won't show instructors. That was like what we thought. We thought that was the safest way of doing it. Every teacher said, absolutely not. Turnitin should not make that decision for us. Just tell us what it is and we'll determine if 20% is the right number. It could be in some situations, 5 is too much. In some situations, 90 is fine. But Turnitin, you don't make that decision for us. So that was a really good piece of feedback. It was really humbling to kind of hear that and then be able to respond to it.
Yeah, and I think a couple things that you said, I was trying to make sure I kept track. Like, the one thing I know that earlier this year, I had people asking me, you know, from all different places, colleagues and people at my, you know, PLN and other people were contacting me like, well, what do we do? You know, like, with ChatGPT, the kids aren't going to do their own work. And I'm like, well, first of all, do we ban it? I said, you know that they still have access to it. They have access to technology outside of it. We're educators. We are in the best place to work with our students to help them to understand the power of technology, just like we have with other forms of technology. And comes down to relationships too. Like, you know, the type of work, the writing style, you get to know your students and how they share their ideas and convey what they have learned in the writing or whatever it is that they're doing. And so that comes in. But I will say that when I was working on my master's, and this goes back, goodness, almost 10 years ago now, I remember the first time I submitted an assignment, and that was new for me because I had like 8-year gap between law school and the master's program. And I got back like this 33% or something. And I was so embarrassed and nervous. I'm like, but I didn't plagiarize anything, you know, but it was the citations, because I had gone from one style, you know, there's like Chicago or MLA. And then I went to like law school, and then it was to APA. And so I was missing a lot of that. But it is a really good way to help students to understand like the importance of citing information. Where do you get the resources from? But I like how you said, you know, we're on to you. Like, we know, like, they think the teachers don't know. Like, when I said, oh, did you use ChatGPT for that? They're like, you know this? I'm like, I do a lot of stuff with tech. Of course, teachers know about it. We may not know all the things, but we know that it exists. And so we're always learning with it. But the other thing I wanted to ask you too is when educators are using this, and I have seen it, but for people who have not seen it yet, like, you know, let's say the student has submitted the work. And I know when I submit my work for my doctoral program, I have like, it's amazing what shows up, like all the information it pulls, where you got the sites from and everything, gives you a percentage, which I always cringe still, even though I know I'm not using ChatGPT. But what are some of those insights that like the educators get whenever they are using it, like that they can take that and, you know, have a conversation? Like, what do they actually see in that, like, I guess, dashboard or in their view?
Yeah, it's similar to the similarity report. They will see, the first thing they'll see is a number, which I fight with. Like, I understand for teachers who like they have a lot going on. They want to see the number. And I think they've got a lot of students and there's plenty of numbers that in their mind that they use and they say, I'm not going to worry about that. Right. And so it gives them a way to organize their work. And I respect that. I still, you know, worry that they get a number without going into the report to actually see it. So I always debate with myself and with my users on like, I feel like I'm giving you a shortcut. I kind of want you to see the whole thing. But yes, once you see the percentage, you can click into it and you'll see the document or the submission by the student. And then you'll see highlighted areas where statistics look like AI writing. Throughout the document, and it would skip around depending on if it was just used in the intro or in the middle or the whole thing, which is always interesting. And we've learned a lot. You know, I think we found that only 3% of submissions, but when you think about all the submissions turned in gets, that's a lot. Only 3% have over 80%. So that's just over 80% is usually the assignment required it, and the teacher said, okay. Or the student just went ahead and turned in what ChatGPT wrote, but it's only 3% of submissions we've seen. So it's not massively blatant. So that was, I think, positive. But they'll see a report with it detailed out and where the areas are. And so what we ask teachers they can do is, first of all, if the teacher knows the student, most of the time, especially in high school, they're gonna know the student. And obviously a large lecture hall class, it's a little bit different. But you know, if you know the student, does it seem different from other things they've turned in? And you could always you would normally ask a student if you have questions, you know, ask them those questions. Say, hey, where did you think about, how did you come up with this idea? What other ideas did you consider? There are other ways of having a conversation with a student to see if they grasp the material, because that's ultimately what we're trying to find out. Did they absorb and learn what you were trying to assess? And did they come out of that assignment constructing their own thoughts and analysis in a way they can communicate it? And you can do that through just, you know, asking the student about certain areas of it. And just a lot of times you can just ask them how they, you know, I think you're right. I would start my students nowadays with the first day of class of like, tell me how you want to use this. How do you want to use this? Just so I can be on the lookout. Do you just want to use it for brainstorming? Do you want to use it for an outline? Like you said, of like maybe constructing a hypothesis. And then we can go from there as a class together. But I do believe, and I don't want to sound like I want AI to write all papers. I don't think that's right. I'm a big believer in learning how to construct arguments and learning how to think and critical thinking. And writing is a way that you develop critical thinking skills. It's not just for communication. It's to help your brain and you understand the material. When you write about something, you are a master of that. And if you think you have an idea or a recommendation, until you write it out with the evidence and those arguments, you don't really know if you have a grasp of it. That is an ultimate test to your thinking process. And for me, I think what we need to understand and we need to start experimenting is what part of the writing process do we need to preserve? And what parts of the process, depending on where the student is in their learning, that we can outsource, right? And that we can add or we can augment to. And that's, I think, the most important conversation we need to have in the next few years.
Yeah, a couple of great things you said there. I love the asking them, you know, like the why. And there was something that I had a conversation with someone too, and And it was kind of around, you know, like, well, why do you try to take a shortcut or why do you use this certain thing? And is it because lack of time? You don't understand it. You know, there was a long list at your brainstorming. I mean, some of them are good. Like, well, I just didn't feel like doing it. Okay. Well, I'm sorry, but you actually have to do this. Or I didn't know where to begin. So I needed some help. And I get that. And I don't think that, you know, these challenges, and we've discussed some of the challenges that schools and teachers are facing, most of them are not new. I mean, we could copy, have people do our homework for us back in the last century, as long as school has been in, like, and you could get away with it because, like, you wouldn't necessarily know, but now we have the technology. And I don't look at I caught you because you're cheating and you're copying and doing all of this. I mean, in some cases, that's the end result, is that somebody did just copy and paste it in, but they've done that before. But in this thing, maybe somebody like myself, even, you know, the APA citations, I'm missing spaces or periods or whatever it is. And sometimes it does help you to learn, and using it as like a way to help students understand, oh, okay, well, I see you got this resource, you have this quote, but here's why it marked this as potential plagiarism, for example. And then having the conversations about, you know, academic integrity and, you know, building your skills. Because at the end of the day, if the tech disappears, we still have to be able to write and communicate. Yeah. So just saying that.
New skills. I think that the validation of what comes out of ChatGPT is going to be a skill, right? How do you, you know, or what are the other arguments that you could have thrown in here, right? There are new ways to think about if we can simplify some of the tasks. I think it does give us the freedom to concentrate on more of the higher level thinking with our students.
Yeah. And I also think too, like with ChatGPT, you can have a lot of fun, like asking it to create something that is, you know, has grammatical errors or it's factually incorrect and things like that. And then having the kids work together or independently, however you want, and they have to like apply their knowledge. There was an interesting project that we were discussing, and it was like, okay, where you divide your class into different groups and you can just use your notes. You can't use anything. You can use Google. You can use ChatGPT.
Oh, that's cool.
And you can't figure out, and then you have to write something, and then you try to figure out, you know, in process elimination, you know, you narrow it down, but it was just an interesting way where you're teaching them about it and like when to rely on your own skills and the power of collaboration, but also having resources, but knowing how to use them. And so just different ideas, because there's a lot of concerns that educators have, especially now, not just with ChatGPT, but with all of these other 11,000 and counting or something, their apps are out there right now. And every day things are coming up with AI. And you're right, you can't keep up. The best we can do is just to stay as aware as we can. You definitely can't avoid it. So you've given a lot of great advice and insight, especially with when it comes to Turnitin and what is offered, but just in general about teaching and the use of AI and how to really embrace it and help students and ourselves learn about it, because we have to keep learning too. But moving forward, and I'll wrap us up with this last question, you know, if people are listening, which I know they are, and they're thinking, you know, this all sounds great, but where do I go from here? Like, what is something I should do? Or, you know, what's a piece of advice that I could go on, especially when it comes to how fast this AI and these technologies are advancing? Like, are there any ideas or tips, advice that you could offer to educators, considering where we, thinking back to like a year ago to where we are now and for the rest of this school year?
Yeah. So the first thing is Turnitin has a bunch of free resources for educators, which we continue to grow. It's a whole resource center, specifically on all of what we do, but also specifically for AI. So I encourage you, it has checklists, things like that, or like policies, I think, are something people talk about as well. You know, policies for different types of classrooms, depending on what you're trying to do. So we have all those resources online. You know, in terms of my cautionary tale is don't beat yourself up because you don't know everything, right? I think that's like, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to try to be like, we have to know up the latest and the greatest, and be patient with yourself as you're learning and how you're working with each other. I think the number one thing that happens is people, they feel as though if they haven't tried it sometimes, that they don't want to share that they haven't tried it or they're struggling with it. like just be as open, as vulnerable, just about everything else that makes, you know, you a good learner and be curious applies here. But it's going to change. It's going to continue to change. And just to be open and transparent about as those things change and they come at us. And also I would say share with each other, I think is the key, and those best practices. And we're really trying to, you know, I'm trying to at our company, how do we get all these best practices we hear about out to everybody else? And those are some of the things that we're working on, because we kind of sit, we hear a lot of it. We're not experts ourselves, educators are, but we are at this hub where we're hearing a lot of it. And I just want to tell everyone that no one has it figured out. So maybe that makes everyone feel a little bit better.
I think it definitely does. And the, you know, for years, I always thought like, oh, I have to know all the answers. And you don't, you can't, it's impossible to know everything about all the things. But what you can do is you can continue to learn and to try and gain some new ideas and perspectives and not be afraid to share like, okay, I have not a clue what I'm doing here. Can somebody help me? Because that's what it's all about. Whether you are the person that's in the front of the room or wherever, because teachers are not always in the front of the room anymore, or you're the student. I mean, we're all learners, especially with this kind of technology. And so great advice from you. Is there anything else that you wanted to share about Turnitin or anything that we didn't cover that you would like to share?
Yeah, I think it's that we want to continue to partner with educators because educators are the experts. And I think that the future of how we embrace this is going to come from both teachers and students, as well as administrators and scientists. And it's going to take all of us coming together to really figure out and to learn how to embrace, but also learn how to preserve those key elements of core skills that we need.
Yeah, that's a great way to sum it up too. Like we got all of this technology, but at the end of the day, we still need some of those core skills because we know how tech is. Well, Annie, thank you so much for your time. And like I have just loved listening to you. You're so positive and informative and just great ideas and insight into it, which is not a surprise because you've been involved in ed tech in varying roles and have a lot of experience at different levels too. And that's the other component that I love when I learn about people is just, you get it. Like you've been working with classrooms and you know what teachers are experiencing and students, and you're helping us all to learn and grow and figure this out. And like, that's how it goes in education. You never stop learning. There's always something that you can improve upon and change and reflect on. So thanks for your time today. And thanks for all the information.
Thanks for having me. It flew by.
I know it did. We keep talking. I mean, this is a topic I love to talk about. And I could tell that you do as well. So we will share some resources in the show notes. And I'll make sure that you have access to all the different things that we talked about, get the links, social links, anything that you possibly want to learn about Turnitin. And thanks to everybody for listening today, or, you know, if you play it a couple of times, because there are lots of great pieces of information in this episode. And we will catch you on the next episode coming up. Oh, you never know with me, but I might have a guest. But I'm so thankful to Annie for being my guest today. And we will see you.